In this episode of Movie Rollers, we talk about 8th grade, and don't worry, he won't get far on foot. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And here's Dee as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter. In theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello.
So, here we are. Yasti's house again. Same. Well, we're still at Yasti's house.
We're still at Yasti's house.
No, we went away for a walk and back
in fact, we actually live at Yasti's house. This is what we don't tell our listeners. We all live in one house.
Still full on the snacks and treats that we've been chomping away on here.
See, when I suggest a sleepover, no one takes me up on it.
Because I like to brush in my own bathroom. is that a weird thing?
Back hair, teeth, hair.
I don't have any back hair.
Anyway,
we should have a sleep.
We're all high on cake. That's what's happening here.
I think it's the corn chips.
Rashmi, it was the corn chips.
I think it's the corn. It's like literally flooded our.
Yes. They're definitely high glycemic
bloodstreams.
Index.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
So tasty. Okay. So we have two movies to talk about this week. But before we go there, because it's a two episode podcast, it's back to our usual segment of I can't find anything to watch on Netflix. And we do this because there's plenty of stuff to watch on Netflix and other streaming services, but can never find anything when we sit down to watch. So as our service to you, we will talk about a couple of movies that are in our queues. So who's ready with a Netflix pick?
Okay, so I was going to pick something and then I found an even better one.
You changed last minute.
I did. So I'm going to suggest that great movie called Sausage Party from 2016. And basically this goes after making a gruesome discovery about life beyond the supermarket, an affable sausage. Yes, you heard me right. An affable sausage strives to save his fellow foods in this raunchy comedy. And it's, it's written heavily by Seth Rogen. So again, it's kind of Judd Apatow-esque and it's just brilliant. I mean, I was in stitches watching this movie. And Joe, I think you were really annoyed.
So
If we were doing a video podcast,
I think everyone would have noticed my entire demeanor completely change upon the recommendation of that movie. My shoulders dropped.
Yes.
My entire mood switched to like this movie. It's probably worth watching just for that. It annoyed the heck out of me.
Yeah.
It was vulgar for the sake of being vulgar, and the whole thing felt like a one joke thing.
But it was so existential.
Maybe I was in a bit of a grump when I watched it. I don't know. Rashmi's thinking he's always in a grump. But I don't know. There's something about that movie that just...
It wound you up.
I'm not a prude in any way, shape or form. It felt like stupid humor. And I like the Jackass series of movies. It's not that I don't mind stupid humor. But this one just felt like cheap nonsense. So... I know. I'm sorry.
That's so British. This wasn't dismissive.
This wasn't a review. I know.
It's cheap nonsense. Now I shall have my tea.
I know. And look, this wasn't a review of Sausage Party. This was my pick.
I'm just expressing the fact that I can't support your pick this week.
It said fancy sausage and fancy buns on the advert.
Not smiling.
Glamour buns. Look, fancy sausages and glamour buns.
It's fun.
Yasti, what have you got for us?
Did you like Sausage Party, Yasti?
I did. I did. It's so much
enough
fun.
Enough Sausage Party.
I like that it's funny, but it's also existential. Yeah. It's about, you know, life and what you...
Correct.
You may die any minute. You can get eaten up, literally, by a human mouth.
And it's about, like, corporation and, life in the aisles.
Yes.
Can we stop the Sausage Party discussion already?
Okay. My recommendation is a movie which came out, I think, last year or the year before, and it's called Love and Friendship. And it's actually based on a not very well-known novella by Jane Austen. And this movie was directed by Wilt Stillman, who has, you know, done Last Days at Disco and, Barcelona and so many films. And you know, this movie is a beautiful, short delight of a film. It's very British. It's a period piece. And it gives an opportunity to one of our kind of overlooked actors, who is Kate Beckinsale, who kind of really plays the matriarch. And it's full of wit and humor. I really enjoyed it. I think, you know, it's not one of those stuffy, you know, BBC adaptations. It's got a lot of energy and joy to it, as period pieces go. And by the way, this is not on Netflix. It's on Amazon Prime.
Okay. So,
yes. Love and Friendship.
Great costume. I'll give you that. And it's a little cheeky.
It is cheeky,
it's
as for its
for
time.
It's cheeky for a period drama.
Yeah, yeah, for its time.
It's no Downton Abbey.
No, it's no Downton Abbey, but it's very witty.
It is witty.
Yeah, I remember you liking that one a lot, Rashmi, when it came out, so... Okay, and then my pick for this week is a movie called The Gift. And I apologize if I have mentioned this before on a podcast, but this movie came out a couple of years ago to very little fanfare. And it was written and directed and starred in by Joel Edgerton, who is one of those actors that I think he is... going to have his day at some point, because he is such a fine actor, and he shows that in this movie. The movie also stars Jason Bateman and Rebecca Hall. And the basic premise is Jason Bateman and his wife, the character played by Jason Bateman and his wife, Robin, have, you know, kind of an idyllic kind of middle, you know, mid-career kind of life, that everything's going really well. And then Jason Bateman bumps into somebody from high school that he doesn't recognize immediately, but this person kind of worms their way back into their life. And it's a very, very suspenseful thriller. It's got a couple of moments of, like, literally there are scenes in this movie that jump out to me as kind of a masterclass in acting on without dialogue. And Jason Bateman in particular
is
terrific. But the star of the show is completely, wholeheartedly Joel Edgerton, who, you know, he can do Hurt, he can do Psycho, he can do everything in this movie. And
Malevolent, beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, let's not forget Rebecca Hall, who makes everything she's in better.
She's always Rebecca Hall.
And even though it's a very simple plot, the movie creates this tension that I can't remember feeling for a long time. I mean, in many movies, you know, it's a very difficult thing to do, but it kind of ratchets up this kind of what is going to happen next type feeling all through the movie. So,
and it's the first movie I've watched, it's a great pick, where sometimes your impression of who the good guy and the bad guy are is twisted on its head once you get to the end of the movie. But not obvious.
Yeah.
I think it's just, it's a beautifully tight 90-minute suspense film. It really is suspenseful. It kind of is always ahead of you. It's so tight. I mean, I think of all three of our movies, if I had to recommend to our listeners, I think this would be the one.
Yeah.
You will not be disappointed.
Yeah,
it's just a fine film. Yeah. And just to bring us all up to date, in December this year, Joel Edgerton's second directorial movie is going to be released. It's called Boy Erased.
Oh.
And the premise is that the son of a Baptist preacher is forced to participate in a church-supported gay conversion program. And Nicole Kidman and Joel Edgerton play the parents of this kid. And Lucas Hedges plays the son.
I already want to watch it.
So it's getting a lot of good buzz. So, you know, Joel Edgerton, I think, is going to be like Greta Gerwig, who everybody knew was great. And we kept seeing him until suddenly, you know, one year she got really celebrated. And I think Joel Edgerton's ship is going to come soon.
I loved him in Gringo. Remember we watched Gringo at the beginning of the year? I think he was terrific in that.
He's great in everything.
Yeah.
So versatile.
Yeah. Okay, so our three movies are Love and Friendship, Sausage Party, boo.
And Sausage Party, yay!
And The Gift. So I'll try and put those in the show notes. Check out one of them somewhere.
Movies,
anywhere.
Joe, you and I probably describe us quite well.
The
right?
Gift.
The Gift, which is dark and malevolent. And Sausage Party, yay!
No, the gift of Sausage Party leads to Love and Friendship.
Which is
Yasti. I would say that was pushing it, Yasti, but that was actually very clever. I'm impressed. Yes. You did that on the fly. Those improv classes weren't a waste at all.
No, they were not. 3 years later, finally, something came out of it.
Okay, two movies to review this week. So we have Eighth Grade and we have Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. So
Eighth Grade.
Eighth Grade, okay. Yasti?
So writer-director Bo Burnham, in his directorial debut, made the movie Eighth Grade, which played at the Sundance Film Festival and came out just wafting on rave reviews. And this movie is getting theatrical distribution. And it's essentially, as I understand it, I really wanted to see the movie, but I couldn't because of scheduling issues. But it's based on an eighth grader's life and how her disastrous year prior to starting high school puts her in a turmoil and how she tries to kind of survive the last week of her eighth grade. Like I said, it's written and directed by Bo Burnham, and it has a cast of mostly unknowns, Josh Hamilton, Emily Robinson, and Elsie Fisher. So again, this is a movie which, you know, got a lot of fanfare out of film festivals, and here it is. Is it worth the hype?
Go see this. Is first, I just have to kind of say this movie is probably competing with A Quiet Place for my favorite movie of the year so far. Wow. It is so well judged and so non-judgmental of the lead character who is growing up. I've never been a 13-year-old girl, but I feel like I understand. I mean, this is a coming-of-age story. This is a kind of one of those movies where, you know, you experience kind of a day in the life of this young character. But it's just so pitch-perfect in terms of some of the issues that everyone encounters growing up that it kind of took me right back to those moments. It lives and dies by its casting, and its casting is not perfect. In particular, the lead, who in my mind is a contender for a Best Actor nomination. I mean, I can't remember seeing a performance this year that I have believed in as much as I believed in what I saw here. So go see this.
We're on the same page, Joe. This is a stunning movie, which is well written and really well acted. At 94 minutes, it's a little bit short. I really wanted more. It finished quickly for my liking, and I think that's just a reflection of how good the movie is. It's so insightful. That's what I've put in my notes, like, so with lots and lots of O's. It's so insightful, and it doesn't matter if you're not an eighth grader or you didn't do eighth grade in the US. These lessons apply to people in the workplace. I mean, this is just stunning. I was a 13-year-old girl, and I think the trials and tribulations are somewhat kept simple, but the movie does really well because I think it also concentrates on this beautiful relationship, painful relationship, difficult relationship between a father and a daughter when a daughter's growing up with a single dad. This is stunning. I agree with you. This is a contender for best movie and also best actress, and if not supporting actor for Josh Hamilton as well.
It's incredible. I mean, the director is only 27 years of age, and he looks like he's 12, at least on his IMDb picture. But the fact that he wrote and directed this, making something, you know, so perceptive, seems remarkable. Makes me eager to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be careful not to oversell it, because this isn't a movie of kind of emotional highs and lows, right? This isn't a kind of a story where, you know, we have an arc, and this is really just about what it's like to be that age, how confusing life can be, how intimidating life can be. And, you know, the beauty of the way that the character is written is that, you can see her inner beauty trying to emerge. She's an emerging adult. Mm. And just like many of us, in growing up, is faced with those moments where she really wants to be something that she's inherently not, right? She's not embracing kind of her inner geek or her inner self. I think, you know, and maybe I relate a little, you know, to that kind of character where, she wants to hang out with the cool kids, but she's not cool. You know, she wants to do various things, but she's not old enough. And, the movie just very non-judgmentally shows us these moments.
But it's not, but the genius, like I said, the genius of it is not that this is some, it's not a typical coming of age movie. I wouldn't even say it's a coming of age movie. In a sense, it just is. Mm. It's just about being who she is And she's really smart, but not in a precocious, contrived, precious way.
She's 13-year-old smart.
Yeah, she. It's just, it just happens.
Yeah, I mean, the movie drops us into this world, and we exist in it for 90 minutes. That's the cleverness of it. It really shows us everything from the right kind of perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And the movie's getting a lot of, there's actually an article that I've pulled up here, Bo Burnham. It's actually an R-rated movie and it definitely earns its R. But Bo Burnham was asked to re-edit the movie if he wanted to get a PG-13 and he refused because he says that eighth grade is R-rated.
But if it prevents other eighth graders from watching it, that would be a
shame. Well, what he's suggesting, and I'm not advocating this, is that teenagers should sneak in. People should sneak in and watch this movie. Now, certainly next to us in the screening, there was a young girl and I saw her mother trying to cover her eyes at certain bits.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's naive to think that 13-year-olds don't talk like this because, you know, as a 13-year-old, you know, I think, you know, I certainly did, and this is the kind of thing that 13-year-olds do talk about, but it's done in a 13-year-old kind of way, and it's not inappropriate given the world that it's in. And I think there are some parents who will be in denial that high school isn't, or middle school rather, isn't this way, but I think it's a spot portrayal. Elsie Fisher, why does she work so well in this movie? I think she has the right physicality. She is filmed and shot the right way. You know, she has this, emerging confidence and kind of inner beauty that we see in the private moments. So the movie is constructed around, you know, she's got it like a YouTube channel or something equivalent. So she does give us her thoughts and feelings in a way that would ordinarily feel contrived, apart from this is what 13-year-olds are doing these days, right? Mm-hmm. They're broadcasting their thoughts on the internet for the whole world to see. And, you know, anyway, I don't want to say much more about the movie because I do think that you need to go see and experience it. It's, again, probably... I struggle to put it above A Quiet Place simply because I loved that movie so much, but this is on par with that in terms of how much I enjoyed it. So I'm going to give this one a 9 out of 10. And I have no valid reason for it not being a 10 at this point.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Eighth grade, 8 out of 10. Okay. Solid.
Yeah, I need to.
Edging up to 9 for me. Yeah.
Need solid. To get on this.
And I agree with Joe. I think Elsie Fisher will see an Oscar nomination potentially.
Good. I love it when little movies, you know, where somebody in their, you know, in their 20s has written something and made it, got a movie made, you know, doesn't just get lost in the shuffle and doesn't get lost in film festivals or on the far nether corners of Netflix or what have you, and makes it, gets a theatrical distribution.
What's interesting is that, you know, this one came out at Sundance and it's enduring. We're starting to see all of those Sundance movies that have been sort of growing in esteem. We're hitting August. So I said in one of the last shows, the season is starting, the season is upon us. And I think we're going to start to see some really incredible movies, but this one's endured. And I think there's a reason I was a little bit worried about, you know, it's getting a lot of hype. Will it, you know, what can be so good? But it just is how I would describe it. It's not, it's not about growing up. It's not, it's just insightful, and it is.
Yeah, I'm mixed about encouraging people to watch the trailer because the trailer does have a couple of key moments in the movie. It didn't spoil it, but there were a couple of key moments in the movie that the trailer shows, which I think lost their edge because of that.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know, if you're unsure about seeing the movie, watch the trailer because the trailer invokes many of the same things that the movie does. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing the trailer and thinking that's a movie I have to watch. And so it wasn't without anticipation for me, which is all the more remarkable when the movie, you know, it comes and does what it does. So, all right. Let's move on. Movie number 2 then is Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. And Rashmi, I think you're going to tell us about this one. And Yazdi, did you see this one too?
I did.
Terrific. Okay.
So basically, on the rocky path to sobriety after a life-changing accident, John Callahan, who is actually a infamous cartoonist, discovers the healing power of art, willing his injured hands into drawing hilarious, often controversial cartoons, which bring him a new lease of life. This is directed by Gus Van Sant. Yay, he's back.
Yes.
Haven't seen anything from him for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's actually based on the book written by John Callahan. And it stars Joaquin Phoenix, Jonah Hill, Rooney Mara, Jack Black, and a few others.
And just for those who may forget who Gus Van Sant directed, you know, this is the director of Good Will Hunting, Milk, so many movies on his resume, but those are a couple that may kind of pique your memory as to.
Yep. So Yazdi, I'm dying to hear what you both thought of this, but kick us off.
So Gus Van Sant, I think more often than not, he has written his own material. This is, I think, one of the rare ones where he has adapted somebody else's, it would seem, material. It has the makings of a really strong, powerful film, and I think that's what he's going for. It didn't work for me. I don't know why it didn't work for me, because it has all the ingredients. It has the caviar, and it has the rich cream, and it has the best actors, and it has a really good script, and it's based on a true story about this remarkable person who was at the depths of alcoholism and, you know, got into a terrible accident where he was essentially quadriplegic. And, you know, the movie, in a very excruciating detail, goes through his recovery process and how he kind of found himself and how he went through therapy and all of that. It's my kind of movie, and yet it didn't work for me. I don't know if it's because of Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, he plays the title character here, and he's just completely in it. But I don't know, somehow he was at a distance from me. And I think I also felt through the whole movie that it was just wallowing too much. And I don't want to make light of somebody's physical impediment, and people go through the worst things, and clearly this person went through the worst things, but I felt like the movie was, for an extended period of time, just gaining some kind of obscene pleasure in seeing this character go further and further south and wallow. It was just a very unpleasant experience for me.
Jeff?
I won't say it was unpleasant, but I know what you're saying, Yazdi. This movie should have had the same...
It should have devastated us.
What was the one that was with the sex therapy one with Helen Hunt?
The Hours. The Sessions.
The Sessions, thank you. Yeah, The Sessions. That was a movie that also had a character who was, extraordinarily disabled and, peeled back the onion to kind of help us recognize a human being that was, you know, within this situation, that was almost trapped within the situation here. And the way that this story was told, perhaps intentionally, because, you know, the character of John Callahan is a real life cartoonist who did do some, you know, very cutting, biting, satirical cartoons, ostensibly, you know, almost like healing by being able to laugh at his personal situation and then using that as a kind of an excuse to attack everyone, you know, so equal opportunity kind of. He's kind of a dark character, and I found it hard to be sympathetic to his plight. Mm-hmm. Not in the obvious way, but in the caring way where you bond with a character in a movie and then you care about what happens to that character. I just found him quite unlikable, which may or may not be true to life in terms of the real person. But because of that, like you, yesterday, I felt myself not connecting with the movie in the way that I thought I would.
And I, three, am on the same page
as
you guys.
This is not often that we all agree.
I knew nothing about the cartoonist, and so I think it was interesting from that point of view. And I thought that the genius of the movie sometimes came when I felt worse for the man's alcoholism than I did for the fact that he's a quadriplegic. And I think at times it's really well acted, and I could see the one or two scenes that they would play when the Oscar nomination is up. But sometimes, maybe because it's supposed to be in an 80s time, mm-hmm. a 70s and 80s time, it came across like a little bit of a Saturday Night Live skit. And it was tonally inconsistent. And overall, I thought it really lacked in emotionality. So I agree with you, Yazdi. I wanted it to devastate me. And there were a few moments where it did. And those moments were actually the quiet moments when we're observing his life rather than when there's actually any dialogue going on. I just think it's underwritten. And especially the Rooney Mara character. It's just generally underwritten. And I couldn't connect with it. So I don't think it's the worst movie of the year.
No, it's worth
a watch, but I was expecting so much more from this.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's interesting. The three of us never actually, I don't think we've ever agreed on a mediocre movie. It's mediocre.
We have agreed. I just think, you know, it's odd that we're all responding the same way to this movie that, like you said, Yazdi, it has everything going for it. Writer, director, performances, I mean, the story, you know, the premise, it's like, it's all there. Why isn't this working?
I can't tell. I think maybe there is some such thing as too much honesty. I mean, this character is, when we first see him, he's so far gone.
Yeah.
He's so far gone. I mean, it's almost played for humor initially. You know, the fact that this guy wakes up and he has like an hour before his alcohol addiction kicks in. And, you know, this person is so severely addicted to alcohol that, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what it is. This movie's too real. I mean, that character was very difficult for me to handle. And, you know, there's this, intentionally, there's this piece in the movie which comes in, I don't know, maybe at the one-third way mark, where you actually find out about what led to him having this horrible car accident, which made him a quadriplegic. And, you know, he meets this guy out of nowhere, played by Jack Black, and the two of them go on this bender where they get sequentially more and more drunk as they're going from one place to the other. And there are scenes where both of them are drunk and they're both driving. And that's like a horror movie to me. I cannot watch somebody driving a car falling asleep because they're so drunk. I mean, and I think that's the whole point of the movie. They're trying to tell you this is what's going to happen at its worst. But it just, there was nothing. It just made me very, very anxious. And I think there was a better way to do it. It kind of really, that was very long drawn. And then I thought that after he had the accident, there is a good 45 minutes of the movie where it's just about him being miserable. And I the wallowing was too much. It was, and I don't mean to be disrespectful. People go through a very, very bad period of adjustment before they're able to come out on the other side. I mean, if I was a quadriplegic, I don't know if I would have made it a week, let alone for years. But there's something about it. And maybe it's just that Joaquin Phoenix is just not on the same frequency as me. I don't know. Of late, he really annoys me. And he does a fine, fine job here. But there's something about him.
And,
I don't know.
And I think it's he's almost going through that Johnny Depp syndrome, which is Johnny Depp, even with a wig and makeup on, is still Johnny Depp in a wig and makeup. And I'm feeling like more and more Joaquin Phoenix is trying these difficult roles. But like you said, you know, he's not doing the guy who does the method acting, who's known for it, who always wins an Oscar, Daniel Day-Lewis. Right. He's not doing the Daniel Day-Lewis method acting school of acting. I mean, and so he just feels like it's all costume. And Jonah Hill, I think, is impressive. But again, it comes off cheap.
What was... Anyway, you finish what you're saying about Joaquin Phoenix and we'll get to Jonah Hill. But no, go on.
Again, I think as we analyze this, right? Because I'm trying to pass this out in my head and I didn't get a chance to kind of really think deeply about the movie before this review. So apologies that you're hearing my thoughts as they formulate on the podcast. But I do think that at its core, the problem is that there's no reason to be sympathetic with this character. And I'm not saying we need to sit there and feel sorry for his plight. No. I mean, I think there are many movies that, you know, we don't have to, but I think he's inherently unlikable in the way that he is written and portrayed.
Even later on.
And
even later on, he's very unlikable.
Right. And so I think, again, this may be the intent of the movie to, you know, I don't know much about John Callan and his cartoons, but you know, he goes, he you know, he's obviously coping by doing these cartoons and pushing buttons because, you know, he's able to laugh at situations that he feels that others can't because of his own particular, you know, challenges. But I think that's probably, in my mind, why the movie struggles, because there's just nothing to root for. There's no one to care about.
Yeah, and I think what was fascinating about his character, I think as a, and again, I didn't know anything about this cartoonist, shame on me, before I watched the movie, but I think what made him really controversial is because he made cartoons which were pretty offensive, but they were, like you said, Rashmi, they were equal opportunity offender. Mm. So he took on, as a cartoonist, he took on like all, you know, all the sacred cows, and he kind of, you know, wrote about it. And I think I would have liked to see how he kind of dealt with that or what made him do that. And the movie kind of doesn't go into that too much.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't get how he became the cartoonist, and that's what he's famous for. And so there's a missing link, I think.
Yeah, and I can understand how if you're a quadriplegic, what you can do is really narrowed down. It's not like you can get in your car and go and work at Starbucks or whatever. So you're really limited in terms of what you can do. And it's entirely amazing that he was able to somehow start drawing these cartoons. But with the cartoons came the wit and, you know,
the bitterness.
And the bitterness. And so I wish that part had been explored a little bit more instead of what happened immediately after the accident. I mean, there's a lot of this thing about him meeting this massage therapist played by, who I don't know what she was,
physical therapist
played by Rooney Mara. And Rooney Mara, I mean, although I never warm up to her, she's always effective in every single movie. I mean, but in this movie, she was completely a device. She was like this golden sunflower which comes into his life at different points and just kind of imparts him sunshine.
I think she has 5 lines. It's so strange.
You see, and you see her hair change from pixie to short to long over time.
That's it.
Yeah, over time. But that was it.
Rashmi, you said it. She was underwritten. Mm. And I think the thing that I struggled with was there was no reason for her character to love this man as depicted in the movie, right?
Great point.
She sees him and, you know, he's a mess when she first encounters him and he's dark. And then there is no moment between the two of them where you say, oh, well, you know, of course, she sees the thing that no one else sees and that is, you know, creates this bond and she just kind
of... it's the cartoon drawing.
She looks at him and goes, you know, I'm in love. And there's it's odd. It's too much of a jump for us as an audience.
I fully agree. And I think as part of her job as a physical therapist, she is required to be exceptionally empathetic, and not inauthentically, but authentically be empathetic to every person she works with. But at what point does this empathy pass over into full out love? It's not really, you know, because certainly his behavior at that time, there's nothing lovable about that. So that kind of felt strange. And then Jonah Hill, bless his heart, I mean, he, you know, I don't
love
know
that he's doing these different roles.
But I know, I like that he's doing, and he's lost a lot of weight.
I love that he's doing all of these. I love what he's doing.
But what was his character? It had no boundary around it. I never understood his character at all. Like, was he, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe we shouldn't do this during the podcast, but was he a super rich guy who had kind of found his calling as Alcoholics Anonymous leader? Is that who
Sponsor,
he was?
Sponsor? Correct.
I got the sense he was a former alcoholic.
Right.
Super rich. And yeah, I think he had, his life seems to lack purpose. But again, I'm inferring all of this. You know,
no, he says
it's
it.
Not there
he
in
says
the movie.
I was born with everything.
But it's so bizarre. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. That character seemed very underwritten. He just kind of, he's there from the beginning.
He's almost messianic.
He looks very Jesus-like. He has this long hair.
Correct.
And, you know, he has his own issues and he's depressed. And it was, I don't know, it was just surreal, some parts of it. I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't
let's wind up
on this.
Yeah. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
Again, I think this movie has everything going for it, but it doesn't work. And so I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 because, again, I was engaged adequately through the movie. And I think it's not a waste of time to watch. Just, you know, there are better movies of this type that are out there. You know, we mentioned The Sessions, My Left Foot, these kind of things about these characters with extraordinary disabilities. Yeah, 6 out of 10.
Yeah, 4.5 out of 10, which I'm going to bump up to a 5 generously. I mean, it's like going to Whole Foods and buying the best eggs and the best, you know, organic onions, and you want to make this perfect omelet, and it's all there, and you come home and you make it, and you know,
you should have just made the scrambled ones.
Yeah, and then that omelet doesn't taste like an omelet. It's so bizarre because God knows Gus Van Sant has made. I mean, he's done some of the best movies of the last 2 decades. And
My Own Private Eye.
And so I don't know why this doesn't work. And I, you know, Joaquin Phoenix is in this other movie that I saw recently. We missed it during screening. It's called You Were Never Really Here.
And it's on my list.
And yeah. It's by the director of We Need to Talk About Kevin. Same director.
It's on my list.
So he is killing it. I mean, he's taking on these very difficult roles, and he's in it, but somehow it didn't work for me. I think maybe, hate to say this, maybe this was not a character on whom a movie should have been made. It sounds a horribly cruel thing to say, but I don't know. Or maybe how it was shown, maybe how it was written.
Yeah.
A little bit of empathy would have been helpful. 5 out of 10.
Rashmi?
I'm agreeing with those 6 out of 10. I think overall it's not a bad watch.
No, it's not bad.
I mean, it did make me want to find out more about the man, John Callahan. I would have been perfectly happy seeing a documentary about his life. But it's tonally inconsistent and it's devoid of emotion, which it really needs. So yeah, 6 out of 10 as well.
Okay, too bad.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's finish the podcast for today. Mail at movieworldlost.com. Let us know what you think of these movies and our podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Twitter.com/movieworldlost if you want to get tweets when we publish a podcast. I think they still go out. I haven't that up for a while, but I think they do.
And we share them on our Facebook page.
Facebook.com/movieworldlost as well. Instagram.com/movieworldlost. Lots of ways to interact with us. Please do. We love it when you do. Until our next podcast, it's too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well. And on our next podcast, we're going to be talking about Mission Impossible.
Yes.
Fallout.
Stop.